Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 14th of March. We've been doing a series of programs on alternative energy, alternatives to oil, and this hour of the program, geothermal energy generated from the Earth's internal heat. By the looks of things, it is something that has really taken off in certain countries in the world. Evidently, in Iceland, geothermal heats almost 9 out of 10 houses. MIT did a study recently on geothermal energy, calling for up to $8 million of investment in research into geothermal over the next 10 years. That's when it projects that the industry could become competitive on the market. We have heard from people, actually, as we've been doing this series of shows, who have heated their own homes in the Wisconsin area with geothermal. And actually, Fond du Lac High School, one of our guests will be from Fond du Lac, supervisor of buildings and grounds for the Fond du Lac school system. They built a very large high school about 6 years ago, 7 years ago now, using a geothermal system. So geothermal energy is what we talk about this hour, and we have two guests with us. John Williams is supervisor of buildings and grounds for the Fond du Lac school system. John Williams, hello. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm really interested in finding out about this this whole program at the high school. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
Yeah, and also Kurt Robinson is with us, executive director of the Geothermal Resources Council, which is headquartered in Davis, California. He is trained in the earth sciences and also teaches at local colleges and universities. Kurt, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Tell me, one of you, give me a description of what geothermal is. What is it?
Well, who should go first here?
Yeah, go ahead, Kurt.
Well, let's see. Geothermal is the a variety of technologies that are currently used in order to extract heat or coolness from the earth in order to change and modify both living systems, or conceivably geothermal can be used to take very heated liquid material out of the earth in order to run and generate power plants to produce electricity.
And we've known about it and used it for a long period of time, or is it new on the scene?
Well, let's see. For geothermal energy generation, it's been around for just about 100 years. First developed in Italy in 1904, but it still is a very, very new type of technology, and there are vast resources available for us to develop.
Why would a country like Iceland heat 9 out of 10 of its homes with geothermal? Why is it so big there in a place like Iceland and not in America?
Well, one, Iceland is small. I think there are only, 300,000 citizens in the country. So there's a scale issue there with respect to Iceland. But it also is readily available just by nature of the volcanic activity and the fissures in the earth, where easy access to heated liquids are available.
I see. John, tell me about the situation in Fond du Lac. I know you weren't there when the school was built, but this is a very, very, very big geothermal system. It's a very large high school, and there are two huge ponds. How did Fond du Lac get this?
Well, actually, Fond du Lac got it from some very astute science teachers who got together and said, how can we do this different? We're building a brand new school. How could we make this energy friendly and environmentally friendly? And the four of them got together, and they worked on this project. They were able to research. They researched, wind, solar, daylighting, and they came up with geothermal. They started doing some investigation and found out that, we think we could make this work in Fond du Lac.
So it came from science teachers. I love this story.
It
became a reality.
It absolutely did. And, quite honestly, with the success we've had for it, I'm very thankful, because my energy bills for Fond du Lac High School are what they predicted, about 20% less than a conventional system. And it has worked for us very well. What we have is we have 2 6-acre ponds that are about 20 feet deep, and we have 41 miles of loop, closed loop, in they're coiled. There's 720 coils that are submerged in our two ponds, and we went with a pond system instead of, sometimes they do the wells, put them into wells. We've done ours in ponds. And the ponds were there because we were required to put in some drainage ponds, and it just seemed to work out very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, for those of us who aren't sophisticated in this, tell me how the ponds work. How do you heat and cool the building from these ponds?
Well, we have a closed-loop system. The water, the fluid inside of the piping goes out to the ponds, and we either, depending on what we're doing, we either exchange the heat or exchange the cooling into the pond. And we use the temperature of the pond to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So and then it comes like a radiator, right?
Pardon me?
It operates sort of like a radiator.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I always think about it as like a drinking fountain, a refrigerated drinking fountain. If you think about that, the fountain actually cools the water you're drinking, and that would be similar to what we're doing with air conditioning.
Hmm.
We take the warm air out of the room, we cool it, and that water, it's transferred to that water back to the pond. And the same applies with when we're heating. We extract the water, the warmness of the water, and blow that out into the air. Each of our classrooms has its own water furnace, and that's where where that happens. And that's been great for comfort in the building. It really is a very consistent source of heating.
Yeah. Now, is this system that they have in Fond du Lac, Kurt, what we think of when we think of geothermal, or is it a variation of it? Usually, do people dig down deeper in the earth to tap into the warmth?
Well, we have two approaches to geothermal on residential and scalable uses for high schools or convenience stores or whatever else, where essentially, as Sean described this, you're able to use geothermal as a heat exchanger. In other words, as John was explaining, you take the ambient temperature of the water, which John, I guess, is what, about 60 degrees or thereabouts?
About 65 in the summer, 65. About 39 in the winter time.
Okay. And essentially just use that ambient temperature in order to heat or cool, depending upon the types of uses. The other type of geothermal is what my organization is involved in, which essentially extracts superheated liquids out of the earth and essentially condenses and vaporizes those liquids to produce steam,
mm-hmm.
which then turns turbines to produce electricity. The good news is with this technology, now, instead of relying upon things coming out of the earth at about 250 degrees Fahrenheit, new technologies are enabling us to turn turbines at about 165 degrees Fahrenheit with new materials that are being used.
Mm. And you found easier ways to drill into the earth, too, haven't you?
Well, that's really essentially the rub with respect to geothermal is
mm-hmm.
that it's a mining extractive sort of technology, and a lot that's been learned about drilling and so forth are things that we learned from less friendly technologies like oil and gas production and so forth.
Right. Why is it that we haven't, if it saves a place like Fond du Lac High School so much money and it reduces tons of CO2 emissions, why haven't we moved ahead on this with much greater speed, Kurt?
Well, there are a couple things. One is that this is still a relatively new type of technology, both for the ground source heat pumps that John's talking about and also the energy generation activities that my organization is involved in. It has been woefully underfunded for years. In fact, and there was an article by Reuters yesterday saying that the White House seeks to cut geothermal research funds. It's one congressman that spoke at our annual conference this last September described the investment in geothermal as decimal dust. The Department of Energy spends $24 billion a year, and last year, Energy committed $26 million out of their $24 billion to geothermal. This year, the White House is seeking to have zero investment in this technology
mm-hmm.
for nuclear and for biogas
right.
and diesels and
right.
things like that.
Are you getting a lot of visitors in Fond du Lac? I know there are other schools in Wisconsin who have installed geothermal systems, but I would think money being tight in places all over the country, they'd be flocking to Fond du Lac to say, how'd you do this, John?
Yeah, we've had some visitors through the high school. Initially when we opened, we probably had more. There are more schools building geothermal systems as they build schools. I know of two in the state right now that are building geothermal systems for their schools. Some actually are looking at doing some retrofitting.
Oh, I was going to ask that.
Geothermal, which is really a good concept also. So we'll have to see how those turn out, and maybe that will be another source of getting geothermal into schools.
Mm-hmm. Have you been pushing for schools to be at the forefront here, Kurt?
Well, like I said, our applications are for big energy productions rather than small-scaled sort of use.
Right.
My organization is involved with the geysers, which is the most productive geothermal facility region in the world, actually, which is just out here in Northern California. We do have companion organizations, such as those that John perhaps are involved in, and that'd be like the International Ground Source Heat Pump Association. And John, just reading up on your school, you have just tremendous activity there, and some California schools also are beginning to adapt. In fact, the College of Marin, just locally, is looking to retrofit their facility.
Oh, they are?
There are these efficiencies that can be gained, and, you know, obviously this is these are taxpayer dollars.
Sure.
That could be converted to, you know, to school books or libraries or, you know, better instruction opportunities in the classroom. So this is very, very beneficial.
Yeah.
Convenience stores out here in California and other parts of the country are starting to use cascading systems whereby you're using these ground source heat pump applications for both heating and cooling. You take the heat off of the back of the refrigerator and essentially then convert it to other forms of energy, and then ultimately, heat the building and chill the ice in the ice box.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Somewhere I've read that America is particularly well suited for geothermal, implying that other nations would not be as well suited. Why are we well suited, Kurt, for geothermal?
Well, a recent study was produced by Massachusetts Institute of Technology just 6-8 weeks ago in conjunction with Southern Methodist University and a few other universities and specialists around the world. And now that the technology is such where you no longer need to have very, very high heated liquids out of the earth, we have observed you know, just from the research of what's available underneath the ground, is that almost any place in the United States can be taken and developed to create geothermal energy to turn and create electricity. In this case, a conservative estimate was that if we adapt this technology in the United States, we probably have enough power for 100 million homes. Okay, so it's essentially there. It's available. It's just a matter of having a wherewithal. MIT estimated that conservatively, an investment of about $300 million by the federal government over the next 10 years would enable us to develop and advance this technology in such a way that we would have enough power for 100 million homes by 2050. You know, 40 years out and thereabouts, and $300 million is not very much money. You know, that was the size of, you know, the Mega Millions lottery that we had in several states. So Bill Gates could fund this in, you know, half a day, right?
Well, why don't you talk to him?
We just might.
I was going to say you already did. I thought that's what you're going to say. And the other thing about this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it would seem to me as though this is an unlimited supply of energy, right? It just keeps renewing itself. It doesn't tap out.
Well, you know, if the resource is managed, you're absolutely right. You know, the Earth is, 4.5 billion years old, and it hasn't cooled off significantly. We still have volcanoes. We still have these fracture zones, which are perfect places for us to essentially exploit, know, this form of energy. And so, yeah, if this is managed, this is a constant renewable indigenous source of energy that will yield energy for generations to come.
Phone calls for our guests in just one moment. We're talking about geothermal energy this hour of the program, our continuing series on alternatives to oil. We have two guests with us, Kurt Robinson, who's executive director of the Geothermal Resources Council, trained in the earth sciences. He teaches at local colleges and universities, joins us by phone from Davis, California. John Williams is the supervisor of buildings and grounds for the Fond du Lac school system. In the year 2000, Fond du Lac built a very large high school. They are using a geothermal system. I love the story. It was because of four astute science teachers who were looking for a unique way and an inexpensive way and a green way to heat and cool the school, and they prevailed. The high schools save lots of money every year in energy and maintenance costs, and they reduce tons of CO2 emissions. And now I understand there are also geothermal systems now in Sun Prairie, Cottage Grove, Fort Atkinson, and Evansville. Want to join us? We'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655 or 227-2050 in Milwaukee. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for our guests, starting with Joel from Coon Valley. Hi, Joel.
Hi. Say, thanks for having this program. I really enjoy what public radio does for our area of the world here. We have a groundwater heat pump at home. We moved into our home maybe 13, 14 years ago. It's an old farmhouse, and there's a spring that actually runs through the basement. It was homesteaded in such a way that the spring would gravity feed through the basement. And when we bought the home, I looked at that as a resource. And after a couple of years, we saved enough money to put in a groundwater heat pump. In order to bring it up to state code, I had to build a spring house and then pressurize it in the spring house to pump it through the ground, because state regulations do not allow you to draw water through the ground. You have to pressurize it through the ground so you don't get contamination.
Mm-hmm.
But we drink that spring water unfiltered. It's really good water, but the water comes out of the ground at 50 degrees. It doesn't matter if it's 100 degrees outside or 30 below, it's 50 degrees.
Huh.
And the spring itself lets out like 400 gallons a minute, but we only use, the heat pump I think uses about 11 gallons a minute. And I was just doing some rough calculations. It costs us about $1 a day average throughout the year for heating and cooling. And in 10 years, figuring today's cost of fuel oil, because I haven't kept track of it, but
$1 a day, that's nothing.
Yeah. We add about 5 degrees of temperature in the summer and take about 5 degrees out of the water in the winter. But over a 10-year period, including the increased cost for the heat pump, because that cost about $6,500 more than a conventional furnace system would, we've saved about $24,500 difference in what we would have if we had bought an oil. And we still have our oil as a backup heat, and we still have the same tank of fuel oil that we started with 10 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
we just have never had a chance to use it. So, you know, I figure I'm saving, right now everything's all paid off, but we're saving about $3,000 a year over the other end. We have a much warmer home than we did with oil.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that a story? Kurt?
That's a marvelous story.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's quite...
There's a lot of farms in our area. We live up in the Mormon Cooley area, and there's a lot of springs up there that feed Mormon Cooley, one of the tributaries of the Mississippi, and... A lot of the old homesteads were put there so that they would have water running through the basement. But like I said, we had to put in a spring house, which, you know, that wasn't really that difficult. It's more sweat than money. But I just love our heat pump. It's a very simple device. The only thing I've had to do in 10 years is take the blower motor, to the motor shop and have the bearings... and motor mounts redone. Other than that, it's run without any problems.
Yeah, what a success story. Thanks so much for the call. What about the upkeep on the Fond du Lac High School system? Is it expensive, John?
I just pulled some numbers up this morning, and so far this year we've spent probably a little under $21,000 on maintenance costs, which really isn't a great deal of money.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the size, I mean, we have 179 individual units in that building. You know, it's a 402,000 square foot facility. So that amount isn't a lot. I just did a quick calculation when Joel said that he spent about a dollar a day.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what size his home is, but we spend about $1,100 a day on geothermal, which is not a great deal of money.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the size of the facility. That's including electric.
Mm-hmm.
If I did just gas, it would be certainly a whole lot lower than that. Our gas consumption for that building runs us just under $95,000 a year.
Hmm. And we should talk about the size of the school. We're talking a really big high school, right?
We're talking a very large high school. It's
mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's 402,000 square feet. It was built for 2,400 students and 200 staff. So we do. It's a very large building, and it is not just a typical two-story. It's a two-story, but then there's lots of legs that extend out in that building. So it does cover quite an area.
Right. Thanks so much for the call, Joel. Great to hear from you. Gene is next from Oshkosh. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, gentlemen. It's nice to hear these success stories. When we moved to Oshkosh and built a new a new home here on the channel in the northeast end, we investigated both air pumps and water pumps. And, of course, the air pump in Wisconsin is not very efficient because we simply get too cold and there aren't enough BTUs running around. But I made a proposal to the DNR, and we were the first house on this whole area on two channels, that we would drill down and get the 54-degree water and use that as a water pump and then expel the water into the channel. Well, that was turned down because of thermal pollution. So I suggested, well, why don't we drill another well then? We'll take the water out of one well and put it back in the other well. But the DNR was not interested in that either. So the net result is we've been wasting an awful lot of money, as all our neighbors have, with natural gas all these years.
Mm.
And my basic question is, are the governmental agencies more willing to consider water-driven heat pumps with either expulsion of the water into a well or into something like your pond or Lake Winnebago, for heaven's sake? I can't imagine if all the homes on Lake Winnebago were using that technology that we would change the water temperature enough. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks, Gene. Kurt, you want to talk?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, there conceivably could be some environmental impact depending upon, again, the scale of the number of applications. But currently, there are not as many uses for this. Residentially, I think there are probably a couple million homes that are equipped using the technology that these gentlemen have spoken about. But it hasn't been adopted to such an extent to have any sort of deleterious impact. Now, I'm not sure about the regulatory environment, and I think it probably varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Some regions are perhaps a little more permissive than others.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I would say the difference in what Gene's talking about is Gene's talking about an open-loop system compared to what we have at the high school, which is a closed-loop system.
Mm-hmm.
We don't dump any of the water. We continue to use the same water.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes through the heat exchanger coils that are submerged in the bottom of the pond. So what he's talking about is he's actually running the water through and then dumping it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a difference between the closed loop and the open loop, and I'm sure that's probably a concern of the DNR is the fact that they're trying to regulate the water that's coming back out then.
Mm-hmm. And the problem would be, what would the water gather if you're running it through and then putting it back? What would be the problem with that?
That I'm really not sure.
Yeah.
What their thought process is. In a case like, I mean, I can understand that living along a waterway, how that would be a great source.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that they probably would not allow coils or loops systems to be placed in the bottom of a channel.
Mm-hmm.
In those cases, you know, it may be, you may be able to use wells that are dug in a closed loop used with those just
mm-hmm.
to extract the heat from the earth, but not knowing the specifics. But I just wanted to point out that would be the differences between the open and a closed.
I see.
We're not drawing water out of the ponds. We're just using the water to exchange the heat and the cooling.
Right.
Well, so in your case, John, correct me if I'm wrong, you're using ponds that are essentially on school district property, right?
Yes,
yeah,
we are.
Okay, so you have a closed-loop system, and so there's you have ownership of the land, and so that probably alleviates some of that concern as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right, thanks very much for the call. And let me give you our phone number, 800-486-8655, 227-2050, if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Continuing our series of conversations on alternatives to oil, we are talking about geothermal energy this hour with the executive director of the Geothermal Resources Council, who is headquartered in Davis, California, and the supervisor of buildings and grounds for the Fond du Lac school system. They have, when they built their new high school, they've been using a geothermal system, which they're very happy with. We go next to Buck from Madison. Hi, Buck.
Ah, what a good show, and all praise to public radio. I'd like to go sideways and slightly downwards about water. We love water in Wisconsin and shut off our faucets when we're not using them and worry about Lake Superior being drunk up. But possibly there's jillions and jillions of gallons down there that can be drawn up. Do you have remarks on this?
Kurt?
Surely. That's a great observation. And you know, we have these so-called, you know, aquifers or, you know, underground reservoirs where essentially we can tap these resources. Throughout most of the state of Wisconsin, in the event that wells would be developed and so forth, virtually the whole state has heated water liquid in your aquifers of between 100 and 150 degrees centigrade. So there are those resources. It takes the will and commitment to drill down perhaps as deep as, 3 miles or so. 3 miles sounds like a lot, but in the petroleum industry, they're going as deep as 10 right now. So, this is only one-third the distance that we're going for other extractive technologies. So, you know, it's there and it's available. In your south western corner of the state, you have liquids, underground potentially of between or temperatures between 150 and 200 degrees centigrade. So I mean that's very, very hot and could also conceivably be developed into this resource to turn turbines in order to create electricity.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Buck, very much for your call. Let's go next to Ron from Madison. Hi, Ron.
Thanks. In 1984, I had a temporary job with the Missouri Geological Survey. I traveled to all 114 counties and inventoried about 200 water wells that are connected at that time to heat pump systems. So this isn't truly the geothermal stuff that the IRS says has to be about 137 degrees or hotter. This is from about 54 to 60 degrees in Missouri. Up here, it's from 47 to 51 degrees for shallow groundwater and soils. The open-loop systems can be much more efficient than the closed-loop systems because you can maintain a much more stable temperature source. The school at Fond du Lac mentioned their temperature ranges from 39 in the winter to 65 in the summer. If they were tapped into an aquifer and using an open-loop system, they should have about 50 degrees, possibly 49 degrees water temperature every day of the year. So they would be more efficient. With an open-loop system, you have mineral buildup. In the Boot Heel of Missouri, where the oxygen is depleted in the shallow groundwater because there's so much organic matter, you get iron and manganese oxides and hydroxides building up and plugging up the radiators, the heat exchangers. In other parts of the world, including much of Wisconsin, where you have limestone, bedrock, calcium, and magnesium bicarbonates build up inside the equipment and would need to be cleaned out with acid occasionally. The opposite problem occurs in the coal mining areas of Missouri, where the acid produced from the pyrites in the coal deposits becomes very acid water. And if you're running that through an open-loop system using copper tubing, you can actually dissolve your copper pipe and flush it back out into the natural system if you're not careful. And so you could overdose on copper. I could talk a couple more hours, but I better shut up and let you guys continue.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, Ron. Kurt.
I'm sorry. I'd lost you there.
You missed?
I missed your question. I'm sorry.
You missed all of what he said?
No, I heard what he said. I didn't hear what you said, however.
Oh, no, I didn't say anything. I just said your name.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say, it sounds like you have another potential guest for the gentleman that just called in. There are those sorts of concerns with respect to our systems as well. You know, in fact, we don't characterize the material that comes out of the earth as water, per se. It's a saline. You know, it's a combination of different mineral deposits and so forth. And so that is an ongoing concern. But it has not really been as deleterious, at least in some of our systems, as was described from the Missouri experience.
Mm-hmm. John, you want to respond to what he said about open-closed systems?
Well, I would agree. We wouldn't have the same iron problems that they would have with an open system. Closed, it's a little bit less in terms of maintenance that you'd have to worry about, those types of things. But I would agree with him that you would get a more consistent temperature because you're not relying on the thermal differences with the ponds from summer to winter. You would have a consistent 54 degree water temperature, so I would agree with that.
We go next to Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. A question for your two guests. And listening to your two guests, this sounds like something that it's long-term, it's evolving, it's being upgraded all the time. And my question is, should building codes take into consideration some future use of this geothermal energy and new construction on large projects be regulated so that they're, ready to implement it to make use of this at some point in the future?
I would think that John and I would probably both emphatically say yes. It's a little bit more expensive to retrofit a building, but in terms of new building constructions, the opportunities for vast savings are there. And John, I would think that your system probably has a predicted life of 40 to 50 years. So I mean, it is a very, very efficient technology that can be used for building heating and cooling.
Well, it does save on, you spend a little bit more putting the system in, and I think we spent around $1 per square foot more to put the geothermal system,
right, system
in. But you also save on your building materials because we were, I believe, two courses of brick less than what we would have had to put in because we didn't have to worry about all the raceways and chases for the ventilation pipes because each of our classrooms has its own unit. So we were able to save some in construction costs for that reason.
Huh. How big are those units in the classroom? Are they bulky or streamlined? Or?
No, actually, you'd be very surprised how small they are.
Huh.
They fit in a standard single-door closet.
Oh, my gosh.
And what they did with ours, which is really kind of slick, is they have quick disconnects on them. So if we're having a problem with that unit, we can take it out, put another one in, and we're ready to go, and it doesn't affect the classroom at all, which is wonderful.
I have one additional question.
Sure.
Oh, okay, good. my understanding from what your guests are saying is that this is basically good for large projects, shopping centers, things of that nature, large schools. But with so much construction going on, what about the individual home? You see these projects going up where there are 40 or 50 homes. Can't something be designed, you know, for that sort of construction?
Well, I'll respond. Mm-hmm. I certainly think it could be. You know, the only problem when you're doing a residential is the cost, and the cost is a little bit higher, and I think that is what deters people from putting the systems in. And, Mike, I'm assuming that you're thinking that if you have 50 homes that you could tap into one resource?
Yes.
Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's been explored, but I certainly think that that would be, you know, a great thing to explore.
Sure, sure.
Whether we could use a central pond or some central area. If you think the square footage of homes compared to a 400,000 square foot facility and what we do with two ponds is really remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
I have just a quick observation here from California, West Coast numbers, and that is a conventional heating cooling system that we put in a residential facility is between $6,000 and $8,000 approximately for a new building, you know, the construction for a home. The a heat pump system would probably cost somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000. So it's about two to three times the cost. You know, which may sound like it's expensive, but it really is an investment. And when you look at the long term, if you were to stay in the property for, you know, 5 to 10 years,
mm-hmm.
you recoup those costs and then begin accruing benefits just from all those other increased savings, because these systems are stable. They're very low maintenance, as John observed, and I think that's also from our experience here. They're very, very, very simple and stable systems that can be used for years.
But isn't that a question of scale? Because it would seem to me that if new building codes mandated it, then, you know, I mean, if everybody who's building a new community, let's say a minimum of 50 homes, has to install something like this, then you're talking the economy of scale. That price may come down significantly.
That makes sense.
No. Go to it. Get
good
it done,
that.
Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Geothermal energy is what we're talking about this hour of the program. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour, John Williams, Supervisor of Buildings and Grounds for the Fond du Lac School System. In 2000, Fond du Lac built a new high school, and they've been using a geothermal system, which saves the school money, is extremely efficient, and reduces substantially their CO2 emissions. Kurt Robinson, Executive Director of the Geothermal Resources Council, headquartered in Davis, California, is also our guest, and our lines have been humming. Keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. Donna from Blair is next. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question for your guests. My husband and I currently live in an old farmhouse. We're going to be building a new house, and I've been thinking about geothermal. But what we have is currently we heat our house largely with wood in an outdoor wood boiler, so the heat is free. And it's piped into the wood boiler, heats up water, and then the hot water is piped into the house underground. And I'm wondering whether instead of using a forced air propane backup, which is what we have now when we build our new house, I'd like to go to a complete radiant heat system, and I'm wondering whether we can use a geothermal system in conjunction with the wood burner as a backup system and then also for cooling in the summer.
Okay. Who wants to take that, John, Kurt?
Sounds more like John's question to me.
John?
Well, you know, and I'm not a geothermal expert, but, boy, that is a good question. I really don't know. The geothermal certainly would be a great source for air conditioning. Are you talking using the geothermal as a backup to the wood burner?
Yes, because right now, you know, we just bought the wood burner, and so I want to, you know, we'll be using it for the next 25 years, and because we have a lot of wood, so the wood is free. So that's, you know, my preferred heating system. But on the shoulder seasons and as a backup right now, we're using propane. You know, we have a normal furnace in the basement that it's a forced air propane.
Right.
But I'd like to get away from the forced air and just do a complete radiant heat system, and I'm wondering, can you tie in the geothermal somehow to use as a backup?
I am not sure of that question, Donna. I wish I could give you an answer. I guess just thinking about it as a quick response, I would probably use the geothermal as my main source and use the wood burner as a backup. but I'm not sure how the two systems could be tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. We go next to Mark from Waukesha. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I recently built a home in Waukesha, and we were fortunate to have a quarter-acre pond on the property, and I have been interested in geothermal for a long time. When I was inquiring of contractors of how I could incorporate some sort of a geothermal heating element into the building plan, they responded like I was an alien. They were totally ignorant. Said, "Oh, this is not something that can be done."
Yeah.
And so on. And the question I have has to do with, you know, I work in medicine, and as a medical professional, we are required to have continuing medical education every so often to make sure we are basically up to date on things. And I don't understand why heating contractors who reportedly claim to be heating professionals don't have some state regulatory mandate to be up to date on the latest energy-saving things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that if they need to be recertified or relicensed every so often, that they need to be up to date on what's up, what's available, so that people like me or anyone else who's interested in some of the newer energy modalities are well informed and can properly educate us and implement these new technologies instead of being in the dark ages.
Mm-hmm.
So how come state regulators don't take a little more active role in this? And I don't mean that government needs to get into everyone's business all the time, but, gee, you know, everyone pays money for relicensing, and what's the point?
Right. Well, it seems to me as the part of this is that we need to know a whole lot more about geothermal, Kurt, and part of this is money being put into research for geothermal and the government talking about how wonderful it is, and it's sort of on the back burner here in a way, isn't it?
Well, back burner or even off the stove altogether,
yeah,
in the event that the budget is zeroed out. So it just doesn't seem to have captured the imagination of some.
It seems that the sexier alternative energies like wind and solar, primarily solar, seems to be stealing much of the public discussion. And in places like Wisconsin, where we don't have as much sunlight as in
right.
the Southwest, it seems like alternatives that are more meaningful and more cost-effective, like geothermal,
mm-hmm.
should be really seriously considered. And we should say, well, you know, if you have a house in Arizona, then solar is the way to go.
Let me just chime in here. You know, the sun only shines half the time, even in Arizona. And so in the case of geothermal, this is continuous. It works 24/7.
That's my point.
The wind blows a third of the time. And so this is, you know, a technology that can be used, it needs to essentially develop interest. And, you know, that's the goal of my organization and
right.
a few other companion organizations that try to advance heat pumps or geothermal energy, such as us.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing I wanted to mention
right.
is that a couple of years ago I was working with a neighborhood organization in the city of Milwaukee, and we had a special program featuring some UWM specialists about alternative energy and how we could retrofit existing homes in the city to do things like incorporate geothermal or solar or wind or whatever. And again, within the context of the city, there is very limited knowledge as to what is efficient and what can be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Totally separate from people who might have more land or more access to, you know, being able to dig up a big pile of land for geothermal tubing and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was disappointing on the part of our professionals, our academicians, who were not well informed about what could be done within a city context.
Yeah, we have a long way to go. Thanks, Mark, for the call. Let's go to Ron next from De Pere. Hi, Ron.
Hello.
Hi.
I called in. I've been listening to your program. It's very good. The reason I called in, I'm actually a certified geothermal contractor in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And listening to some of the questions that had come up, I am aware of developments where they have the developer that puts in the street and the sewer and, you know, the water lines and everything else, has also installed pre-installed geothermal loops that are shared by every home in the development.
Mm.
And then the homes go in and hook up to this loop system, and it's all part of the developer's upfront cost, and then of course rolls into the cost of the property, you know, when it's developed and when they build on it. So that's being done. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is the things that we have been quoting here locally in terms of the investment and payback. We have not seen a project yet where, if you combine energy cost and mortgage on a new development, where the monthly payment for those two things combined would be higher if you do geothermal than not doing it. We're seeing, even at today's energy rates, that the cost to, you know, the cash flow of making those two payments per month on a property, this would be on a residence, is typically lower if you do geothermal than if you don't.
Hmm, that's interesting. John, you want to respond to that?
Well, I'm not residential. I don't know. I mean, I know we paid a little bit extra to put it in, but the payback is such a short time. If you compare the difference between what the geothermal system costs you and what a conventional system costs you, I believe our payback was like 3 years.
Mm.
Yeah, and I believe that. I have heard that commercial projects typically come in with a much higher payback. What we're seeing is if somebody's looking at fuel oil or propane as their alternate fuel and comparing it to geothermal, we have seen paybacks in the 3.5 to 5 year time frame on a new house.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at natural gas as an alternative fuel, the paybacks are ranging from 5 to 8.5 years.
Mm.
Seems to be where it's coming in. And even at 8.5 years, I think the return on investment works out to about 13.5% on the additional cost of doing the geothermal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's looking real good. There was also a homeowner that had called in about having a wood boiler and wanted to know when they built their new house if they could do something with geothermal for a radiant heating system.
Mm-hmm.
And they can. There are heat pumps called ground-to-water heat pumps. They are well-suited for doing radiant, which is a low-temperature heating application. If you do something with, like, baseboard, you have to have higher-temperature heat, and geothermal won't work real well for it. But for what she was talking about, a ground-to-water heat pump could be put in. It could be set up with control systems to either supplement the wood burner so that when it's falling behind or if they're gone, then the geothermal would contribute or take over the system.
Mm-hmm.
And then these geothermal heat pumps, these water heat pumps, you can also get them in reversing models. They both heat and cool, and you could have an air handler with a condensing water coil and then use that same water heat pump to cool your house in the summer.
Great.
So, I mean, you know, there's numerous options available mm-hmm. with this equipment, and what you need to do is find somebody that's gone through the certification training for geothermal, and they can share options
right.
with you.
Right. Thanks, Ron, very much for the call. Time for one more call. Mike from Green Bay. Hi.
Hi. This is Mike from Green Bay. I'm on the board of directors with the Wisconsin Geothermal Association,
mm-hmm.
and I'm also an installing contractor, but I know one of the earlier calls, the person mentioned that all the heating contractors should be up to date on the newest type of technology. And the one thing with the geothermal system, it is a complex system. There is quite a bit of training to learn to install the systems. And I think that's one crucial thing when a homeowner is looking at the system, to make sure the person's trained and qualified to do that. And then one of the other questions they're asking is, you know, they mentioned that it could be installed on large projects. And but what about residential? And there are definite possibilities of doing community loops where we can tie a small development into one system, and then they all can operate off of the same ground loop system.
Uh-huh. All right, great. Thanks very much for the call. Well, now that we've informed people a little bit about geothermal, where can they go to get more information, be it for residential, for schools, for larger places? Where can we brush up on geothermal, Kurt?
Well,
our website, geothermal.org, for the Geothermal Resources Council, has all kinds of links for individuals to not only look at the material that we have and some of the scientific and educational materials we've developed, but also it will direct people to other companion organizations,
mm-hmm.
Geothermal Education Office in California,
okay.
Geothermal Energy Association, and so forth.
All right. And you have a website about your system, too, in Fond du Lac, don't you, John?
I don't know if it's specifically on our website or not.
Okay.
I know we went through Alliance Energy Geothermal.
That's where I got it, yes.
Information Office.
Okay.
And do you want that address?
Do you have
the website?
Quickly, the website.
www.AllianceEnergyGeothermal.com.
All right. Thank you both so much. Interesting hour. Our thanks to John Williams and Kurt Robinson, Susie Seidelman for on-air or for production of the show, and Mimi Notstein for on-air production. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. Copies of the show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. The program number is 314E, 314E. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Stay tuned for many more interesting programs. The news is next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.